giving you a nice message. You have the wrong place.
Good morning. Can we please start? Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome, honorable members. Welcome to the Minister of Public Enterprises and the team from, I won't call you SASOL. Last time I kept calling SASOL ESCO. So from ESCO. Honorable members of the public, the media, members of staff, I must particularly welcome the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, Honorable Lizatiduba here. We had asked that we convene this meeting jointly with public enterprises. I know that some things were lost in communication. The Z list does say that this is a joint meeting. The secretary of the Energy Portfolio Committee tells me something different. I will follow the Z list. The next item is apologies. In due course, I'll give over to the chairperson of the Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee before we allow the Honorable Minister to make some opening remarks.
Thank you, Chair. So the following apologies. Honorable Mackay, who requested to leave at 12:30 due to other urgent parliamentary activities. And then Honorable Lowe and Mackay, Chair. 12:30, Chair. Honorable Lowe and Honorable Mahayam Baslala, who's running late, but they will be joining us here. And then the apology from the Deputy Minister, who's unable to attend as he is abroad currently. And then the Minister of Energy also indicated that she will be coming here, but she's running late. She's delayed. Those are the apologies, Chair. Thank you.
Good morning, and Chairperson of Portfolio Committee of Energy, thank you very much. It is indeed a great pleasure to have you this morning to come and interact with one another on very important issues which are related to energy. And we must really put up on front that we just had this meeting last week with Portfolio of Public Enterprises, and we need to maybe coordinate our work better so that we don't have briefings more often. And in future, when we say it's a joint sitting of Portfolio Committee, it should be us and themselves. Unfortunately, last week they were not able to join us with ESCOM because they had other issues to attend. But we are really pleased to welcome you this morning and also to to interact with one another, because issues of energy, as we always say, they are very important to us, all of us as the citizens of this country, because this is where we need to drive the economy, and also to create much needed jobs, in particular the unemployed young people of this country. Where with these few words, I thank you very much, Chairperson, for inviting us, and we are ready to engage with our counterparts from ESCOM and also the public in general. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'm sure the members of our portfolio committee will agree. We've already agreed with the Chairperson of Public Enterprises that in future, on matters that are similar, we'll try and do jointly instead of asking ladies and gentlemen who are very busy out there to be coming to Parliament too often, that as far as possible, we will hold joint committee sittings so that members of the committee that view that. And thanks for joining us. We members, let's give over to the Minister of Public Enterprises to make opening remarks. I'm told the Minister of Energy will join us soon. If there's no indication from any member, I'll give over to the Honorable Minister. Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I really appreciate the comments of the two chairpersons on coordination, because I think it will also help us. I'd like ESCOM to be in ESCOM and not in Parliament more often. Thank you very much. And so it's I'm very grateful for that. Chairperson, as you're aware, Cabinet approved a package to support a strong and sustainable ESCOM, to ensure that the energy security of the country is maintained, as well as supporting GDP growth. This package was based on recommendations from an interministerial committee, and I'll call it the IMC going forward, comprising of Ministers of Finance, Minister of Energy, Minister of COPTA, and myself, which we reviewed an extensive set of options available to ensure energy security. The package is a combination of tariff adjustments, which the regulator will consider through its regulatory processes, cost containment by ESCOM, and an equity injection, which the Minister of Finance would give more detail to in his medium-term budget policy statement in October. It is also clear that a discussion on the long-term structure of the energy industry and the role of ESCOM within it is long overdue, and I am pleased to announce, since the Minister of Energy is not here now, that we will have our second one tomorrow. It is the IMC's view that this package would assist ESCOM to continue and complete the construction of the new power blocks. So in this regard, Chairperson, today is probably 99 days it's 99 days from today that ESCOM will see the first synchronization of its Medupi's Unit 6, and that will be the first of the 6 units. I was able to witness myself the progress, and I must commend those who work at Medupi and ESCOM for I wish I can take everybody to go and see it. It's really an incredible construction. And they are very far down the line, and I'm very conscious of the fact that it's 3 years late. But I'm hoping that the lessons learned at Medupi Unit 6 are lessons that ESCOM embraces, understands, has knowledge of, and knows for Kusile and every single other unit that we have learned those lessons. Because Medupi is expected to boost Lepalali's economy by about 95% a year. I mean, daily, 1,400 people walk through the gates of Medupi. I mean, localization is happening around the Lepalali area, where 12 out of the 22 major contracts have been won by the community of Lepalali, and 100 out of 167 purchase orders. So there has been significant effort by ESCOM and its contractors through the Medupi Legacy Program to address the surrounding community's immediate socioeconomic needs. I'm aware that Medupi has had challenges, and I'm told that there's a long way to go before the whole power station is completed. My department will follow the progress keenly. We are launching the dashboard, and I will be looking at it on a monthly basis so that we absolutely confirm today and last week and the week before that Medupi must come online by December 2014 and Kusile by 2015. So it will be time before South Africa's energy shortages are a thing of the past. Until then, and even after that, we should all be aware of our shared responsibility, ensuring not only sustainable energy supply, but also sustainable energy consumption. So in conclusion, I'd like to say thank you to the chairperson for this gathering, and I also would like to say to ESCOM that they've turned the corner on Medupi, and we can confidently await the countdown today. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks.
I'll give you a slow clap.
Thanks, Honourable Minister. I'm sure Honourable Freeland did clap for the long-term structure.
It's a slow clap because I'm still waiting for it to come.
You're waiting.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
Thanks very much, Minister. Can we have the presentation by ESCOM? Later on we'll talk about something we have raised about an oversight visit to Medupi before within this 99 days. So we just have to work through at what point this will happen. We will consult with our counterparts in public enterprises so that it's something we can do jointly. But it is something that we certainly want to do within this 99 days. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister. Chairperson, you are correct. We will be waiting to get a date from yourselves and Members of Parliament for us to be able to host you on a site visit to the Medupi construction site. We are hoping that it will coincide with one of our milestones as we run towards the 100-day countdown to first synchronization. I'll just indicate very briefly where we are in terms of reaching the 100-day goal that the minister has set for us on Saturday. We have already traveled a long distance. We have gone through the hydro test, we have gone through the boiler chemical clean. We've gone through the turbine on bearing, that is putting the turbine in place, and connecting it. We are doing the test run as we speak. We complete that on Friday, and then we then go for first oil fire. First oil fire meaning then that we ignite the station for the first time with oil initially, and then with coal. We already have coal on site ready to be put into the station. And once we have done the first fire oils, which we hope to do by the end of this month or first week of October, and we are hoping that your visit might have to coincide with that first fire milestone. Sometimes referred to as the smoke from the pipes, because that would be the first time that you see some smoke coming out of Medupi. We will then be ready to turn the steam for the first time to prepare for first power being put onto the grid on the 24th of December. As the minister said, we are confident that we will be able to reach that target. We have the support of all the stakeholders, our contractors, the workers, and hopefully the support of government as well, and the people of South Africa, to ensure that we start delivering tangibly on this major infrastructure project that has been delayed for some time. And that is meant to alleviate the capacity shortfall in our energy sector. After December, which will be after the first power is put onto the grid, we will go through a process of making adjustments, tweaking the system, balancing the grid with the plant to the level that is required, and ramping up the power that goes into the grid on a gradual basis up to the time when we are able to reach full power, or what we refer to as commercial operation in May, June 2015, which will then bring just under 800 megawatts of electricity to South Africa. And thereafter, we will then move on to Unit 5, synchronization, in December 2015, and it will follow 6 months after that. We are hoping that with the successful implementation of the Medupi power station, we will see gradual implementation and coming into operation of the other two power projects, which is Kusile and Ingula. We're going to give a more detailed presentation of the entire power delivery projects that Eskom is currently undertaking. Obviously, Medupi being the most important, but we've got Kusile, we've got Ingula, we've got a massive expansion program in our transmission lines. We also have a major program to also expand our distribution networks to ensure that the additional power that is being produced is able to be transported and delivered to the end users, both residential and industrial and commercial. One of the things that we will touch on briefly as well is the fact that much as Eskom is delivering this power, it's not doing so exclusively. We also have projects that are underway involving the private sector power producers who are actively producing power to augment the efforts that Eskom is taking in ensuring security of energy in the country. And we'll touch briefly on what we are doing with the private sector to in partnership to bring in new capacity to the country. We have a delegation here with me. Mr. Marukan is our group executive for Group Capital, basically responsible for the entire new build. Mr. Ndo here is from the office of the chief executive, and Franz here is our project engineer for the new build across the new build space in ESCO. Dan is going to take us through the entire space of our capacity expansion program in a bit more detail, as you have been requesting us to do, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. It is very important that as we get ourselves ready for the first power from one of our major build projects, that we also understand the context within which this project is being undertaken, in appreciation of the entire portfolio of the new generation capacity and transmission that has been under execution since 2006. So on the slide that is displayed, the Chairperson, there are a number of projects shown under different categories. The return to service, involved the refurbishment of stations that were mothballed. There were three in particular, Chairperson, and two of those have already been officially opened by the state president, being Komati and Grootvlei. So the Camden and Grootvlei, Komati is also completed, and those collectively brought 3,700 megawatts back onto the grid. We also spend a lot of time, preparing for the baseload projects. It's common cause that we have spent significant amount of time doing all the necessary pre-studies on the nuclear site, on the next coal site, and we undertook this within the context of dealing with the important engineering studies necessary for detailed planning and preparations of execution of the projects to avoid similar occurrences that we have seen on the current execution projects under execution. In the baseload section, of course, Medupi and Kusile are the big topical projects, and we will talk a bit more about those in the next few slides. We've done a lot of projects under peaking and renewables. We've done the OCGTs, the open cycle combined projects out here in Ankerlach and in Mossel Bay. Chair, it's also important to note that at the end of this year, we shall have concluded the construction of the 100-megawatt Sera wind farm up on the west coast, and that will be up and functional. We have now over 37 of the 46 wind turbines already installed, and all the connection into the grid already active. So we're ready to put that production capacity of renewables into our fleet as well. We have a number of solar PV installations at our sites and the power stations also already operational. We've done some refurbishment of our existing power stations, and those are listed there, and in the process been able to harvest more megawatts from our existing infrastructure. The one part of our construction that is very lightly celebrated is the expansive transmission network that we have across the country. This network is very important because it creates and provides critical backbone for stable supply of power to our customers. And it is through this expansive network that you are able to give quality supply that is not disrupted by minor disturbances in the weather patterns. It's also important to provide the backbone for the expansive electrification program that ESCOM, in support of the government, has undertaken and continue to connect more and more of South Africans through to the grid. In that regard, when this program is complete, we will have just under 10,000 of kilometers of new high voltage transmission lines installed, with also substations to strengthen the different areas. So all in all, this is the expansive capacity program that we are undertaking as ESCOM. Chair, the next slide depicts some of the pictures from Medupi Power Station. I think these pictures do not do the actual construction site justice.
Just go back.
Okay.
I don't normally do this. Did you say that we're coming back to base load? That
so
column on base load.
Yes, sir.
So you're coming back to
this. We're coming back. Okay. In fact, we are going to talk about Medupi and Kusile, specifically under base load, which are the under construction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I did hear you say that. Sure.
Okay, sorry, Chair. Chair, these pictures here are actually the pictures of Medupi, which is one of the base load stations, coal stations. As said, they do not do such a good justice because the magnitude of the size and structure is not well captured in picture format, and I think the visit of the members through to site will give a testimony of the massive infrastructure that is already in place. On the first slide where we discuss the next slide where we discuss the Medupi in detail, Chairperson, there are three key areas that we thought we should share with the committee today. The first one is that the December 2014 synchronization date is still on target. And as the minister explained before, as an organization, we had to reorganize ourselves to ensure that we protect this date against quite a number of challenges. The recent challenge, as members may be aware, had to do with the work disruption as a result of labor in the latter parts of July. We've had to reorganize resources. We've asked our contractors to bring more resources to work. We're working 24/7 on our sites, and we have also prioritized this unit over and above the other units to ensure that we remain on track. And it is as a result of that that the key stages that the chief executive showed earlier on around chemical clean were completed within target earlier than the scheduled date, in, as a matter of fact. And now we're readying ourselves for the first fires at the end of this at the end of this month. We found very innovative ways of collaboratively working with our contractors, and we have demanded and continue to receive attention from the highest level of these organizations. As we speak yesterday, we actually met with the leadership of Mitsubishi Hitachi from Japan that actually came down and do the project oversight themselves on a regular basis to ensure that many of the problems we've encountered before are dealt with for once and for all. The next project, if you go on to the next slide, is the Kusile Power Station. And you'll see pictorially, Kusile is about a year behind Medupi. Kusile is the has benefited immensely from the lessons we painfully learned at Medupi with regards to quality control, in particular in the control and instrumentation of the plant. We have seen from the productivity perspective, we have seen the improvement of the boiler construction from less than 0.5% per week in March to some 0.74% per week, which is still not good enough for the targets that we have. And this is the subject of our conversation yesterday with our major contractor with regards to the changes that we'll want to see to their subcontractors and also the strengthened supervision and new resources to ensure that work execution delivers the pace as we require. We have also taken some innovative ways in parallel to do preparatory work for control and instrumentation to avoid a situation that delayed us at Medupi in as far as the unit synchronization is concerned. So later this month, we will consolidate the information before us and make some decisions of the next steps. in as far as the control instrumentation is concerned. Chair, we have, based on the lessons we learned at Medupi, been very aggressive in the contract management, where we're really putting our contractors under very strict terms to perform quite tirelessly, and it is yielding the required attention from their highest offices as well. What we are confronting in this process is also closing the gap between what the global construction industry's capabilities are matched with the local capabilities to see these projects through. The world continues to evolve, and we have learned that in order to safeguard our projects and to ensure that we have them delivered within the right schedules and cost, it may require of us to move too much into the kitchens of the subcontractors as well, to oversee the quality and to oversee the work execution, which traditionally one would have stepped away from. But this is the reality that we're finding ourselves in, and we have to close up these gaps as we build up more of the boilers and the rest of our plant construction goes on. So you'll see that in the next slide, the productivity curve for Kusile is not where exactly we want it to be. Our next focal point with our main contractor is really driving it to the next level. We've seen the improvement that we wanted from the first interventions. We now have to take this to the next level of engagement, and it requires a much more different collaboration than we would have dealt with previously. Some of the main challenges coming from both these two projects have been widely reported on. The issues around welding defects, we have encountered quite a number of welding defects in both Medupi Unit 6 and to a small extent to Kusile Unit 1. We have technically resolved all these problems, Chairperson. They've taken us some time and some pain, but you know, our engineering team and our contractors' engineering teams now know how to solve each and every of the challenges that we've encountered, but more importantly, how to do almost online checking and avoidance of these quality issues as we go on. So we're beginning to put a lot more attention on the subcontractors in the workshops of the subcontractors. We have rigid and very visible quality control from both ourselves as ESCOM and the main contractors. The control and instrumentation, I'm happy to report that with the challenges we had at Medupi, we ended up having to integrate two suppliers to solve the control instrumentation problem. And whilst the test of the separate pieces of work were successful at manufacturing sites, the key test and the acid test was always going to be how the two systems work in harmony whilst on site. And that test, which is the site integration test, have been successfully concluded in the run-up to us commissioning Medupi Unit 6. So that solution has worked for us, and we are now evaluating solutions for Kusile in the event that we have delays of compliance again. We remain focused on safety. Our build sites continue to have the best safety record across the ESCOM fleet, and it's important that we do not rest on our laurels in as far as safety is concerned. And the safety record is quite impressive also on an international basis. Chair, the next slide shows some decision trees that we've had to put through with regards to solving the control and instrumentation problems both at Medupi and Kusile. Suffice to say that we now know that the Medupi control instrumentation system works from this hybrid system that we are using. We are evaluating the progress done by the contractor on the Kusile side, and we will, in the course of this month, later this month, reaching some decision points to protect our schedule for Kusile and for the permanent solutions for the rest of Medupi itself. The next project, Chair, that is also important is the Ingula pump storage project out in Ladysmith. The committee will recall that at the end of 2013, October, we had an unfortunate incident where a wet platform in the tunnel between the top dam and the bottom dam, down the incline of a hill, got loose from the anchors, and as it rolled down that incline, in the process, injured and killed six of our working colleagues there. The process for the investigation has now been completed. The DMR investigation was completed last week, Friday. We have collaborated with the DMR as per the requirements of the Mine Health Safety Act. More importantly, we had already increased our safety support and control at the site by employing more resources and reviewing all our procedures and processes to improve work culture that is in line with our safety aspirations. Work has started. Only last week we got the final clearance to re-enter the site and begin the construction of the finishing of the tunnel. And as a result of that, the first synchronization of the Ingula units, four of the units, will happen around September this year, almost about a year delayed as a result of the next year as a result of the incident. The main critical areas remain the civil works, which is where the accident happened, and we have now revised methods which are much more safer, a little bit slower, and supported by the authorities for us to go and complete the work. And so that the next slide shows the completion profile. It will pick up quite sharply, Chairperson, as soon as the underground civil works are completed, because most of the mechanical work happens in a very safe place and is already quite advanced. As indicated, we also do a lot of transmission projects. You'll see a picture of the transmission substation. We're building quite a number of the substations. There's very impressive new ones in the Eastern Cape to strengthen the part of the Eastern Cape that was previously in the Bantustan, so that the power supply there can be very rigid. We're building new ones in Limpopo to integrate Medupi power into the national grid, and on the northwest side and to the north of Rustenburg as well, and across the country as a whole, as we put transmission wires for high voltage transmission. In as far as the productivity and targets are concerned, we're very comfortable with the kilometers that we complete per year, Chair. We've seen also very great improvements of safety in this area that used to bedevil our operations in the last 3 years, and we've now turned the corner in the space. Of course, we are limited and controlled and stay within the budgetary constraints, which are part of our sustainability issues. And that's essentially the presentation of the project. Share the last slide, which is very important, summarizes the key lessons that we have learned, which is the next slide, around how to manage this build programs, which is a country we have to be alert to. It's about the deployment of an insistence on adoption of internationally benchmarked project management methodologies. So we're subjecting ourselves through this, and we're becoming more clearer in terms of our reporting and transparency around them. The important part here is also building in the contract management capabilities. As indicated, our contractors are not necessarily having some of the best skills that we may wish they have, and as a result, as the project owners ourselves, we have to do more than we would have ordinarily done to ensure the delivery of our projects. This is one key learning that we have taken through, and we are collaborating with our contractors to close this gap. The issue of oversight is very important, and also the supervisory requirements at the work execution itself is what we're focusing on. Chair, I'll leave the presentation at this point, and we'll deal with more of the issues guided by the questions that will come.
I think that would be the end of the presentation. You'll note that in the package that we prepared for honorable members, we have also included additional information on the summer plan, as well as on the IPPs. We have given that information basically for the benefit of honourable members. We do not intend to go through the slides. It's safe to indicate some key points around the two areas. If I could do that in the next 2 minutes, I think you'll see then that we have just gone through summer. I mean through winter, where we had a constrained system, but we still managed to balance supply with the demand, particularly the peak demand in the mornings and in the evenings. The profile in summer is slightly different. We have a very constant pressure on our grid throughout the day, and this is mostly because we use the summer season to take most of our units out for planned maintenance, so that they are in a better quality performance for the next winter season, which means then that we take off the grid quite a huge chunk of the capacity, and that puts a strain on the grid for most of the day, from basically from 6 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock in the evening. We are using other levers to ensure that drop in the capacity that is available, that we augment it. And we are using both demand-side levers, where we reduce demand to the extent that we can, but we also rely on other supply levers to augment the shortfall in capacity. And herein comes the role of the private sector again. We have short-term IPPs that we procure power from Sasol, Agrego, to other municipalities that do not have use of extra capacity to cross-border power purchases, primarily from Mozambique, from our counterpart in Mozambique, the EDM, which is the ESCOM in Mozambique. We are confident that we will be able to get sufficient power to help us go through the summer seasons. But we also have some unreliable supply that could impact on our ability to meet demand during this period. And we have taken measures to ensure that should that happen, we will have managed load reduction in place. And we have reported previously, I'm not sure whether it's to this portfolio committee or to another one other, that we are concluding the necessary protocols with the regulator to ensure that we are able to give some predictability about power reductions to our consumers on a week ahead as well as a day ahead, but as close as possible to the time when we might be required to do any load reduction. We have also undertaken that should load reduction be necessary, this will be limited to a stage one reduction, which is reducing load by 1,200 megawatts and not more than that. This is intended to ensure that we protect the integrity of the grid. To do more than that puts an additional strain on our grid, and to recover from a reduction of load higher than 1,200, it will take us a long time. We also need to briefly indicate that we have been compelled previously to use very expensive fuel to fire our OCGT plants to try and meet the shortfall in supply. We are actively taking measures to offset the high cost of diesel that we use to fire our OCGT plants by using alternative energy. As I've indicated, we are procuring gas, for example, from Mozambique as a cheaper option to the use of diesel for our OCGT plants. but we are not going to be able to completely get away from the OCGT. We will continue to use OCGTs very sparingly, knowing that that cost is heavy on us, is heavy on the country. But we are going to do a balancing act even on that one, just to ensure that we are able to continue to guarantee security of supply. But we have said before that we have moved away from keeping the lights on at all costs. We are going to protect our grid. Just moving on to the issues around the IPPs, we continue to encourage new power producers to come into the energy sector. And I'm saying continue because we have been doing this all along. As I've indicated that we have been using the private sector to meet our peak shortfalls. We'll use the private sector to meet our summer constraints. We continue to ensure that the government's renewable energy IPPs, which is driven by the Department of Energy, that we are able to connect those power producers onto our grid. We have been able to successfully connect quite a number of projects. Over 30 of them have already been connected to the grid since bid window 1. We are at bid window 3 now, and we are on target to connect the last batch of that of those IPPs that have been announced by the Department of Energy. There are some challenges at the end where we may be seeing some delays in the connections, but those are not delays that are challenges that are unsurmountable. We will deal with them. One of the challenges that we have indicated is the ability or the coordination between ourselves and the department to ensure that in advance we know where the connection points are supposed to be. And we are already engaging with the Department of Energy to ensure that there's that alignment properly. We continue to support the Department of Energy's program in the IPP space, where the department will be going out to procure power from independent power producers, and we are the off-taker of that. We are ready to sign PPAs or power purchase agreements that results from whatever procurement that the DOE has procured with the private sector. And this is a long-term power purchases we get involved in. We foresee that we will continue to crowd in the private sector participation in the energy sector as part of a concerted effort to ensure energy security for the country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Complaining about yeah, no thanks. Honourable members, the minister has given us her colleague, so she'll soon leave. The minister of energy is not here yet. So I won't raise the questions I wanted to raise on the base load section, not just on the entire of the base load section, because it's the crucial part of. I won't do that now. So honourable members, can we? Ask our questions. I suppose maybe the first set of questions the minister will still be answering. Honorable Frele, you are the only one. Honorable Mark. I didn't see Honorable Mohammed. Honorable Makubela Mashele, Honorable Makai, Honorable Estate. In that order, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And I first also want to register my objection as well. I think this is about the third presentation we've had from ESCOM on the new build program. One of them was a joint meeting with Public Enterprises about 2 weeks ago as well. And while obviously this is of huge concern, and I think that this information is vital, I have put it on record before that I really truly believe that nurses should be at these briefings. You know, to be quite honest with you, Chair, I'm tired of just listening to ESCOM produce their statement around the new build program, and we don't have any interrogation by NERSA giving their points as to whether they agree with the statements and they agree with the efficiencies that ESCOM is putting forward. NERSA also needs to explain their decision around the RCA and about the clawback and about the increase in tariffs that they've awarded to ESCOM. I think this is a vital part of the picture that really should be presented, and really as the Energy Committee, it is high time we called NERSA to this committee to come and explain all of these issues so we can properly interrogate these facts. So I just want to put that on record once again, Chair. But then let us look at some of these facts, and let's look at the kind of delays in Medupi and Kasili and what this has cost us. According to my estimation, Medupi is about 45 months delayed. I mean, we should have had full power by October 2013. The question is, how much does this now cost South Africa, and who's going to pay for this? If I work it out, it's about 26 billion rand in foregone revenue that ESCOM has per year that ESCOM has had to incur through the delays in Medupi. That accounts to about 100 billion rand in foregone revenue because of these four-year delays. If you add to that the cost of running the OCGTs because of the tight system, if you add to that the amount that has to be paid to Exxaro for coal that isn't being used, I mean, we're talking about huge numbers here of over 100, 120 billion rand that this has cost the South African economy. Not to mention the tight energy supply and the fact that we can't actually grow our economy and create the kinds of jobs that we need to because of that. Now, if we look at the delays in Kasile, and, you know, Kasile doesn't get talked a bit much about because we're all concerned about Medupi. But I'll be interested to hear, what are the delays at Kasile? How long is that? According to my estimation, we're also looking at about a 45-month delay at Kasile. That's going to bring in similar kind of cost estimation. We get into figures that are close to the kind of cash hole that ESCOM is in. Now, the issue is here as well, and ESCOM hasn't provided us with these documents yet. I wish to know, how much are we going to put the contractors on the hook for these hundreds of billions of rand that this has cost the economy? And it's mainly through their mess-ups that this has been caused, and the fact that ESCOM hasn't been able to properly manage that. Are the contractors going to pay any of that money back to ESCOM and to the South African public that this has cost us? I'll be interested to know. Then also to the minister, because, you know, we're not privy to this interministerial committee. You know, it seems that energy policy now gets set by the cabinet, and we don't get to actually engage with it, and we don't get to engage with the kinds of issues that are coming out of it. I mean, I wish the energy minister was here, because I'd like to know when the IRP update will in fact be submitted to cabinet, and when a revised IRP based on that update will in fact be submitted to cabinet, because that hasn't happened yet, and a lot of those recommendations haven't been taken into account. So we're still working off the IRP 2010, even though the IRP update says that there's a number of issues that have changed in the interim. So I'd be interested to know that, but maybe the Minister of Public Enterprise would be able to give us some knowledge on that. Secondly, I mean, in that IRP update, it in fact explicitly states that we shouldn't go ahead with the nuclear deal if the capital cost is going to be above $6,500 per kilowatt hour, per installed kilowatt. What seems to have happened at the IMC, and the minister can provide some clarity on this, is that we're looking at what's called the build, own, operate scenario, where we're going to invite companies to bid based on them building it and then giving a takeoff price. is there a kind of ceiling for that takeoff price? Because if I look at the experience around the world, at Hinkley Point, for instance, it's coming in at R1.66 a kilowatt hour. At Turkey, which is still suffering a number of delays, it's coming in around about R1.35 a kilowatt hour. That's substantially more than Eskom's blended price at the moment. So is there a ceiling that's been set per kilowatt hour price if we're going to go that route? Because I think the public needs to know that. And has there been some kind of talk around what the future electricity pricing path will be to accommodate this extra cost for nuclear? Because I think that the public needs to know that before we go into this particular deal and before the procurement gets put out on that regard. And then just lastly on another issue, this issue around, you mentioned once again the renewable energy IPP program and how you bring in some of those programs online. I am hearing enormous concerns about the grid strengthening and the fact that the grid strengthening has not been done substantially, particularly for those projects. And then, in fact, the original cost estimates that Eskom gave are now about double for in many instances what they expect the IPPs to pay to connect to the grid. Is that true? And if that is the case, Where was the money for the grid strengthening? Was that diverted away from grid strengthening and, in fact, diverted to the Medupi project? Because this is also what I've been hearing. And I'd like a straight answer on that, as why hasn't the sufficient grid strengthening taken place in time and that money being spent timelessly and incurred by Eskom to strengthen the grid so IPPs can, in fact, connect to it? And if that's not the case, where was that money diverted to, and was it diverted to Medupi? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Well, I'm not so... I'm not a pessimist like... like my previous... my colleague. Well, I'm very optimistic. I see a bright picture, unlike the doom a picture that has just been painted by my colleague, but that's just on a very light note. Mine is to appreciate the work done by Eskom first and to appreciate the fact that we are moving on a direction that says our energy sources are going to be secured. And that means we are going to be growing our economy. As South Africa grows, we need to be in a space where our energy is secured. Now, I've heard you speak about an application that ordinary people can upload to that tracks the projects, that gives you the work that is done by the projects on a daily basis. I would like you to share that with us so that we at times do not need to even write questions to the minister and to Eskom. We can just have that application uploaded on our phones and just check the progress of the project. Well, I want to find out from yourselves, with the completion of these two major projects, how much megawatts of energy is that going to be giving our, or being taken, or that is going to get into our grid, so that we do not have to have these other sources of energy where we actually spend more to get energy for actually the summer seasons and the winter seasons. How much of megawatts is that going to be given to our transmission lines, and is that a long-term plan to actually assist us in the space that we find ourselves in right now? The second part that I want to speak to is around the spin-offs that these projects have given to the communities or the areas around where they are built. It's much appreciated to know that Medupi or the area around Medupi Lephalale is now just a transformed place. In the deep rural Limpopo, tourism has been blooming around the area, and ordinary people around those areas are benefiting from the spin-offs that these projects have given to the communities. Can you share with us some of the plans that you have on a long term? Because I understand this project, after this project finishes or completes, some of the workers that have been employed will be retrenched. If you do have a plan with some of the major contractors that are there to say how have they transferred the skills into those ordinary South Africans who've benefited, and what is the plan around that? Because I'm afraid to see a situation where today you are employed and suddenly in the next month all is gone, and there isn't much plan on a long-term process or long-term absorption of this. Especially it's young people I know that have been taken on board on this major project. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'd like us to cast our minds back briefly to the public enterprise meeting of 2 weeks ago. Unfortunately, the Minister was unable to attend, but CEO Majile was in fact there. I hope Mr. Majile remembers my face, because I asked on the day very specifically about the Kuburg steam generator contract. My request to both the Minister's office and the CEO's office have not yet elicited a written response or any kind of response. And so once again, while I have both the Minister and the CEO in the room, I'd like to ask them both, when will the complete tender documents for the Eskom steam generator contract be made available to both this committee and the Public Enterprises Committee for scrutiny? We cannot say that this matter has been put to an end, and we in the DA are deeply disturbed by what we see as very high levels of potential corruption in what is one of our most important state-owned enterprises. I therefore ask the Minister and the CEO to give us a frank and honest, uncomplicated answer as to when we can expect those documents. Secondly, I'd like to register again my objection about the way this government and these departments and ministers are approaching energy policy within South Africa. Lord knows if it wasn't for Carol Patton and the Business Day and its 36,000 readers, we in the committee, we would be very ill-informed about what is happening at the highest levels of energy policy in the country. Let us not pretend that this is, you know, policy unchanged or policy from the fourth administration and the fourth parliament. The fact that the minister, and I'm talking about the Minister of Energy, has yet to submit the IRP 2013 to the cabinet for approval tells us that something is up, that this is being delayed purposefully, and we are deeply concerned. Let us be clear that government's pursuit of nuclear, despite its own policy of the NDP, as well as despite the clear findings in the IRP 2013 document, and the exclusion of Eskom potentially from the new build program, means that there's a radical shift in energy policy in South Africa that is not coming via this committee or via the people at large. We are their representatives. We have a right to understand how energy policy is changing and why. And frankly, at the moment, all we're getting are leaks from via the media. So although we thank Business Day and we thank Carol Patton for keeping us informed, we really do feel that the Minister and this government have a responsibility to this committee to make this information available to the committee and explain why these decisions are being taken, because Lord knows we actually don't know. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Estes, sorry. Honourable Maxwell Mashela wants to make a quick follow-up. Are you referring to writer at large?
I think that's what they call it, Jay, yes.
Okay. Honourable Makuma, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, it was just the fact that I'm a member of this portfolio committee, and I don't recall us requesting any tender documents or tender scrutiny issues. So when Honourable Mackay says we as this portfolio committee, he's talking about all of us. So it was just made clear that I don't recall us asking for any any documents, any tender documents to come before the portfolio committee. When that arises, it should be a decision of the portfolio committee. I just wanted to make myself clear on that part, because I know for the fact that I'm a full-time member of this portfolio committee, and I haven't heard us discuss any of that such, which talks about tender documents and tender scrutiny and everything. You know, when that comes, ESCOM, it will be this portfolio committee.
Sorry, she has a point of clarity. The full-time member was actually not at the last joint sitting of both committees where this request was put in to the CEO. And I'm very happy to accept the document in my personal capacity as a member of Parliament if the committee doesn't want to see the document. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also start off with the contractors. Well, let me maybe first just ask, as an essential service provider, isn't ESCOM protected from legal strikes? Essential service providers are usually protected from legal strikes, and I think ESCOM should also be. And then on contractors, I mean, if a contract worker strikes, if you employ a contractor and his worker strikes, you can tell him where to go. It's simple as that. You don't have to sit up with contract workers. And just paging through, we look at the work supplied by the contractors. On page, well, this page is not numbered, on key challenges, Madupi and Kusile. It says that the boilers, inadequate failed weld procedures on boilers, because the boilers was not post-weld heat treatment was carried out. Post and pre-heatment or heat treatment is very, very essential on any pressure vessels. Firstly, for the stress relief, on any high carbon steel, actually, we used to do pinging. That's another form, but on pressure vessels, it's essential. And I don't know how contractors can get away with that. And it costs the taxpayers millions, because those vessels will have to be scrapped afterwards. Who's actually paying for it? Again, only the taxpayers. I also can't see that all six, I think it was Honorable Greiling who mentioned that Madupi is already 4 years late. Not only 4 years late, only billions of rand late. I think Madupi was first earmarked for about 90 billion rand, and that was with cost escalations, with labor increases, with everything, 90 million. But now it's 164, I stand to be corrected, billion rand already, and rising by the day. And not all of the six 794 turbines will be up by the end of this year also. I can't see that happen. ESCOM has a generating capacity of 35,200 megawatts in total, that's in total. And sadly, all these coal-powered power stations are at the end of their life, or very close to their working life. And now, at this stage of their life, they now have to work harder than what they were actually even designed to do in the beginning. And they could collapse in total before these new power stations come in progress, because there's no planned maintenance in process. This is why all this free, and I don't even want to, I've said it so many times, these diesel generators, all 14 of the turbines running at this stage at enormous cost to the taxpayers, 24/7. And I also say that the explosion at Duva was an indication of what's happening or what's coming. Critical maintenance is so far behind that ESCOM can only now produce 75% of total capacity. And I wonder if ESCOM realized how serious this is, that a country can, that this, the whole system can collapse in total, and the country could be in darkness for 3, even 4 weeks. But that actually happened in the United States of America and in New York State in 2003. The whole of Manhattan came to a complete standstill for 2 weeks And only 2 weeks, because they had a strong support system from around. And that's not going to happen here. We haven't got a strong system from our neighboring countries. We actually give them power, electricity. The problem is that Eskom has always been planning and spending for today and never for tomorrow. And it's Eskom's own fault that this country is in this crisis. I also read that Eskom wants to increase their capacity to 80,000 megawatts by 2026. That's 12 years from now, more than double. I really can't see that happen with mega coal-fired power stations and nuclear hydro schemes. I think it's also wrong from Eskom in this temptation to respond with sledgehammer projects. And that's again a lack of proper planning, not good management. Who is going to pay it for, again, the already cash-strapped consumers? And I'd say it would make more sense to continue with procurement of renewable energy that's mentioned in there. Because all of these big Eskom projects won't make a difference in any case in the next 10 years. Mr. Brown himself has said that Eskom achieved only 57% of their target. And that's not good enough. Not with the billions of taxpayers' money that's being spent. Thank you, Chair.
Can we have responses?
Chair.
I'll start with the Minister, if she would, so that, yeah.
Chair, I'd like to start. In fact, the Honourable Member who says that it's Eskom's own fault for being in the position it is. I agree around issues of efficiency. And we are calling on Eskom to build in greater efficiency in terms of their own containment processes, but also in terms of optimization of their balance sheet. But let me just place it into context that I think is a very... It's actually missing, and it's ahistorical to think in the way we are doing at the moment. You must remember that Eskom's fault is that it included the majority of people post-1994. Pre-1994, 5.2 million households had access to electricity. Post-1994, in 20 years, and that was accumulated over 100 years before 1989. So, post-1994, we had to open up the country, and everybody was fleeing this country. So, 7 million more households had access to electricity. And as we speak today, 85% of the population has access to electricity. So, yes, I think part of the problem is that Eskom has not kept up with maintenance over the period, that we have not had, and I've said this before, we must know what the end state of energy is and know what the REIPPs, the IPPs, what has to be built into the energy processes. So in terms of all the questions around the details, I'm leaving it. We've got the engineer who's in charge of the build processes. We've got Dan here. They will all speak to it in a lot more detail. There was a question about after the plants are on track and completed, how many kilowatts or megawatts will be brought online? I think it's 4,800. We have to determine the future electricity pricing path. Yeah. We have to. It's not in my portfolio. But the IRP is in the process of being updated as we are speaking now. Of course, Honourable Member Grayling, the point is that government does set policy. And members of this august House of Parliament should call government to account for it. But having said that, Chair, is this the steam generation that I'm accused of being corrupt for?
No,
you did. In your letter, I have to tell you, to avoid corruption, I'm not in charge of bid documents. I don't sit in bid community committees or anything. So no, I will not be sending you the bids because I don't want them. It remains in ESCOM's hold because I have oversight over what ESCOM does. I don't run ESCOM. So I don't politically interfere in what decisions are made. So I will not be responding to you on the matter. ESCOM will make a decision as the process is concluded, how they respond to you. And so I think that for me is the aspersions around it is actually you either want me to politically interfere or not want me to politically interfere. I think the issue about the build program, the only way the build program actually creates a economy around it for the communities and people in terms of growing that economy and improving the quality of people's lives, as well as generating electricity, ensuring that there's enough power for both the economy as well as households, is actually for the local government and the provincial government, for us all to work together on it. I'm very pleased, I mean, when I, in Lephalale, that by the time it's completed, 95% economic growth would have taken place in the area. What, I mean, I listened on Saturday to the whole welding program. Now, we have a large shortage in this country of artisans. And so we are training many, many welders within the project itself. And one of the issues is how do we keep those people within our country? Because they leave, they go and find brighter, more money, they travel, they do all of that. And so, I mean, that's an issue that was raised as something that was concerning, but of course we also want to give young people the opportunity to do what they need to do. In terms of contracts, that it first comes from the Lephalale area, I mean, I'm just using that as an example, and then it goes to the broader Limpopo area. I think I think all the rest of the issues, there are a couple of quite technical issues that I think the ESCOM members should deal with. Thank you.
Thanks, Minister. I'm sure you'll excuse the Mr. Machi.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, just to indicate on the matter of the SGR, the last time we were here, when a question was asked around that, we indicated that we were not at liberty to go into details as the matter was still sub judice. It was still before the courts. We can now report that that legal process has been exhausted. Indeed, the applicant who had claimed that the process was flawed actually withdrew that application in court. And this was publicized. For us, this was an admission that there was no case from the onset, that our process was beyond reproach. And we can still vouch even today about the integrity of the process that we followed in adjudicating that transaction. And that we will be prepared to stand before court again if that is required to defend that process and the interests of ESCOM. We are in the process of providing the losing bidder with information within the requirements of the law. And we had at no stage refused to provide that information. We had said that we will do so within the confines of the law. We are doing so, ensuring that all the issues around the confidentiality of the parties involved are protected. And I think we can give the members in the House an assurance that should there be a request by a member for information, we will do so within the confines of the law, respecting the confidentiality of some of the information. So we are open, we are transparent, we have absolutely nothing to hide. Just to deal with issues around the renewable energy IPPs. And the role that we play in strengthening the grid and ensuring that there's connection. I think we have gone quite a long way to ensure that we open access to the grid in preparation for not only the RE IPPs, but for any other future independent power producers as well. We have put together a specialist unit within ESCOM called the Grid Access Unit, which with its primary function being to facilitate the connection of IPPs to the grid. That the GAU, the Grid Access Unit, is meant by it's resourced by a specialist in the field, and it is engaging on a constant way through an energy technical evaluation committee comprising ESCOM, NERSA, AMEU, which is a specialist engineers, organized engineers, particularly in the local government space, who regularly assess the requirements and collaborate in ensuring that those needs are being met. We also have a regular interaction with the Department of Energy through the Grid Access Unit to collaborate and to align our programs with the DOE's own programs. We have had challenges. We have been able to meet the connections for bid 1 and bid 2. Even under conditions where we were basically reacting and not moving parallel with the department. We've had some challenges when it came to bid 3, primarily because of the shortfall in the NERSA funding resulting from the MYPD 3 approvals. We have had to fund part of that strengthening of our transmission outside of the necessary resources, and that has impacted on the time that it would take us to actually do the connection. We have had to reprioritize our capital expenditure to cater for the additional strengthening of the grid that was required, and we will continue to do so to prepare for the strengthening of the grid beyond the bid 3 window. The cost that we incur is not readily available. We normally recover it a year later out of the tariff. So it does have some impact on our cash flow, but it is a temporary challenge. We are engaging actively with the Department of Energy to avoid this type of impact for any future PPAs that we would need to sign with the new IPPs for renewable energy. The issues around ESCOM being an essential service, I think, and therefore not being allowed to strike, that applies to ESCOM employees. and I think the unions have respected that. But at our construction site, we find most of the workers are not ESCOM employees. They're employees of the contractors that we have employed, and therefore do not fall within the scope of being defined as essential service workers, and therefore they are allowed to strike. We have gotten into very elaborate arrangements, even with the unions in the at our construction sites, where we have partnership agreements that regulate the resolution of industrial disputes. And this has been a very painstaking process that we have had to jointly with the contractors engage with the unions that are organizing in that area. And it has resulted in a much better relationship between ESCOM, the contractors, and the workers, in a manner that we have now secured a commitment by both the contractors and the workers, and the organized formations of those workers, the unions, to support the program of ensuring the delivery of all these three projects, particularly to ensure that we no longer have any scheduled slips in Midupi. So the working environment between ourselves and the unions is at its best at the moment. And we are almost on a daily basis ensuring that we maintain that relationship to ensure that we all can say that we can achieve the completion of those projects. The previous faults that we had around the boilers, Dan has indicated the steps that we took to deal with those challenges around the boiler, the wells, and the faults that we faced with. We have now done that. We are past that point. We have learned some painful lessons, and we have put in measures to ensure that we avoid any repetition of those. Part of those lessons and steps we have put in place is to go beyond just the contractor, to actually go and monitor what happens at the workshops where this faults actually originated, with the subcontractor to our contractor. We've also strengthened our project management capability on our major contractors. We have also taken very unprecedented steps in terms of penalizing the contractors for non-performance and the slippage of their committed schedule. We have had to call, amongst others, the bond of the major contractors. We called the Hitachi bond as well. With the other contractor, we have had to terminate the contract of one of the contractors responsible for the turbines and bring in a new service provider to ensure that we are able to meet the targets of ensuring that Midupi in particular is compliant in terms of the boiler safety issues and the instrumentation and controls. So we have taken, we have enforced the penalties that we had at our disposal on those contractors. We also have claims against the contractors for delays and or non-performance. Those claims are being processed as we talk, and they normally take long because they are also being challenged, but there are also counterclaims from the contractors as well. And the counterclaims are partly what results in some of the escalations in costs. The cost overruns are attributable both to claims by contractors as well as the delays that are occasioned either by industrial action and or by contractors' poor performance. Every single day that a project is delayed has an additional cost to that project. But we also know that with projects of this nature, and this is the case internationally, they are seldom completed on time and on cost or on budget. Very seldom. But we are not saying that we are taking that for granted and therefore spending public funds even in areas where we should have been able to contain the cost downwards. We are indeed ensuring that we stick to approved budget for Medupi. We have indicated that there will be cost overruns in the projects of this nature. And that what we are doing, we are ensuring that we are scrubbing the entire capital project budget to ensure that whatever cost overruns there may be are covered within an approved budget. If we need to seek additional budget for that, we will approach the minister through the necessary procedures to ensure that we are able then to complete the process. We, at this stage, are confident that we can do so within our limited resources. We also have to indicate that as we roll out the program for new capacity, we are also implementing a plan to improve the performance of our existing generation fleet so that we don't lose the capacity that we are able to provide now, but we maintain it and actually improve the energy availability out of our existing assets. We have put in place a comprehensive plan to accelerate the performance of our generation plan by taking specifically the unplanned outages that are a result, amongst others, of deferred maintenance as well as poor performance by our contractors who do the maintenance. There's a focus on ensuring that we arrest the decline in the performance of our generation fleet, and this will take some time. We are talking about a period of between 3 to 5 years that we have set ourselves to turn around the generation fleet. Mindful of some of the challenges that we have in our current fleet, part of which is a very old fleet that would require a complete refurbishment and or a life extension. But that program is intended both to arrest the current decline, to stabilize the performance, and then to implement improvements that will see our energy availability factor going above 85%. And the target there is between 2019. It sort of coincides with what we are targeting as the time by which we would have that 9,500 megawatts from a combined Medupi Kusile completion of those two projects. So there's there are parallel processes that are meant to put our house in order as we are putting in new capacity onto the grid. The third component, obviously, that the size of which we don't know, is that we are going to see an increasing participation of private sector in the IPP space, which will also be augmenting the capacity shortfall that we are experimenting. So we do have those plans in place that are intended to ensure that we deal with our own generation fleet and improve its performance in a manner that will be transparent and clearly able of being monitored, and we will will be reporting on any improvement and or lack thereof on a regular basis. I think then we'll be able to deal with some of the questions around that I have not covered.
Chair, there was a question specifically relating to the spin-offs of the project to the local communities. In this instance, it's really for the greater Lephalale area, the greater Bronkhorstspruit areas where Kusile is, the greater Ladysmith area where Ingula is being constructed. Over and above the investment in the corporate social investment in those areas, we have taken a conscious view in the procurement strategies to support local businesses. And the minister earlier spoke about 12 of the major 20 contracts being in the local areas in Lephalale, and 100 over 165 pitches and acquisitions generally being driven towards procurement in those spaces to create sustainable businesses. And we have quite a long list of those that total that shows how the 2.5 billion injection in that community is made up of. Of course, these projects don't last forever. And the skills that you develop and the employment that you create is for a defined period. And it is for that reason that if you look at the area like Lephalale with the Midupi Leadership Initiative, which is a joint initiative between our contractors and ourselves as ESCOM, we are doing the aftercare of competency and skills development for employees who have worked on the project and now demobilized to get them to a point where they're able to, on their own, create employment or be ready for the next project. And herein comes in the need for a continuity in terms of next projects that will see employment and the development of the town going through. So we're already investing in the skills that will be required for the next cycle of projects, be it Coal 3, be it the Waterbeck rail line, and so on and so on, and development of the mines to support all that strategy in the space. It's important that the policy movements also happen in sync with the utilization of those skills. We're also working with other structures and spheres of government, the Department of Environmental Affairs in particular, programs working for water and the caring for the biodiversity in those areas. We're training people up, we're investing in those, and those are creating jobs in the rural communities in the vicinity of Lephalale. So there's quite a myriad of them, and we'll be happy to show this. And Chair, I think we'll spend a lot more time when we have the site visit to showcase some of these projects and some of the recipients of this project, so the committee could actually have a sense of the first-hand experiences through from them. I think there's a question around the dashboard, and it's tracking the progress. I know that the dashboard is being availed to the ministry, and I think maybe within the realms of the collaboration between the department and the committee, we could see how that should be to be handled. But essentially, it is an ongoing tool that will enable the ministry from a distance to be able to see the same data as us in the progression of the project execution itself. And it's part of what I spoke about of increasing the oversight in as far as these projects are concerned to all our key stakeholders.
Thank you, ESCOM. Then we have follow-up questions at this stage. Honorable Freya.
Yeah, Chair. I mean, I think that the answers give some indication of my initial point, that we really need NERSA.
Okay, Honorable Freya, we're going to have to repeat that comment. I didn't...
I just
wanted to note Honorable Mahambehlala, Honorable Lowe.
Okay.
And that's all. Honorable Esther, is your hand up? Yeah, okay. And that's all. It's not a bad thing to break early so we can have lunch today. We normally struggle most of the days. Honorable Freely?
Okay, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I mean, the responses to some of my questions indicate the importance of having NERSA at these briefings. Because once again, the call by ESCOM is to say that the reason they haven't done the grid strengthening is because of the NERSA decision around the NYPD. And I would be interested to hear NERSA's comments on that, because then NERSA needs to be taken to task if that, in fact, is the case. And I'd like to know what, in fact, the veracity of these different claims are. Because what we're dealing with here is essentially ESCOM is currently in charge of the grid, is currently owns the grid, and currently decides where it strengthens, what money it spends on all of that. And, of course, the perception is out there that ESCOM cannot be a referee and a player in this space. And clearly, we need to take this grid away from ESCOM to dispel that notion from IPPs that they are, in fact, being blocked access by ESCOM. And that's why I think we really do need to have NERSA at these briefings to be able to counter some of these claims or at least explain some of them. Then secondly, I mean, my question wasn't really answered. I mean, I outlined in the beginning how much these delays have cost us, and you haven't told me how big a delay Kusile is. We know the delay at Medupi is 4 years. Are we looking at a four-year delay at Kusile as well? And if that's the case, that's going to cost us billions of rand. In fact, we're looking at over 100 billion rand costing the South African economy. Now, NERSA has the regulatory clearing account, which allows them to claw back money from consumers. My question to ESCOM is, why are we having to claw back that money from consumers when, in fact, we should be clawing back that money from the contractors who have, in fact, put us in this mess? And I want to know, I know that you've got claims there, and this is all speaking very general, but I want to know the specifics. How much are we looking at clawing back from these contractors? What are those kinds of claims that we're putting in there? What is it that we can expect to get? Is it 5 billion? Is it 10 billion? Is it 20 billion? Or is it, in fact, a far lesser figure, and, in fact, we're not going to be getting kind of justice on that? So I'd be interested to hear from you as to what those answers are. Thanks.
Honourable Freyler, I'm sure you're not putting this to ESCOM to get NERSA here. With Mabo, we had this discussion. It was a question of dates from our side, because already we had adopted the program. No one is disagreeing that we should have NERSA coming here. So it's an issue that we've got to arrange, because they've got to be invited here. So let's have a discussion and find time as to at what point are we going to have NERSA here so that we can also listen to them. So there's no disagreement on that point, because it was raised earlier on in our meeting here. Honorable Mohamed Sal.
Thank you, Chair. I was hoping not to speak today. Without sounding or hoping I won't sound like a prophet of doom. Chair, I just want to check with ESCOM. How is this energy will be used in the industrial beneficiation programs that are outlined in the NDP? That's my interest. Currently, the contracts with the major industry players are not only consuming much energy, but underpriced. Do you perhaps have a research about the current pricing models with these industry players or smelters? And for the sustainability of ESCOM, Chair, going forward, it should also have to consider how these current pricing models are reviewed. And also, which is my last submission, ESCOM is a strategic energy force in the transformation agenda, the second transition, that will not only deal with our trip impel challenges, but improve the posture of South African society. Now, it would be great if ESCOM can share with our research or researchers of how you see in the energy space
or what you see in the energy space and how you plan to maximize this opportunity to change Southern Africa in general. You can respond to this on a later stage. Probably you are not prepared on this one. But at a later stage, you can respond when you come back for your presentation, because I would love to know, because you are strategically placed to contribute more to the economy of our country, so that as government you are able to achieve what President Zuma said in the State of the Nation in terms of and the improvement to the economy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is just the gentleman earlier on said they are struggling with skilled contractors, and that was quite a concern for me. It's like, on which basis or which criteria do you use to hire contractors? Because you are sitting now with unskilled contractors that can't deliver on what they need to deliver. So, and then if you're going to continue hiring them, how are you ensuring, and which criteria are you using for hiring those contractors? Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you, Chair. I also had a concern about NERSA, the National Energy Regulator. I thought the input would be essential. But since I'm covered in that, I can honor, maybe ask the gentleman who did the main presentation, as I haven't had the honor, sir. You are not maybe Mr. Moleta, the CFO, Chief Financial Officer? Oh. Because I was thinking, you know, with the revenue shortfall of Eskom, 255 billion rand, and outstanding debt at 254 billion rand, this bailout, can I call it, by government now, 500 billion rand, won't really help you that much. So I can maybe, Mr. Montana, the new CEO that was appointed. By the way, why is he only starting in October? He was already in August appointed, for one thing. I'm making up questions because the Honourable Gray took my questions away. He read my mail.
That's your memo.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think just it's not a question, but I think just for future meetings or committees that we're going to sit in, we are here to ask questions, and regardless if we're going to ask a question and eyebrows are going to be raised, it's really a concern, regardless of what question we are asking here. That is part of our oversight role. And it shouldn't be an eyebrows because we ask sweetheart questions here to ESCOM. We are sitting with a crisis here, and if you're going to come and ask sweetheart questions, we're not going to get to the crux of the program, of the problem. And we want to get to the crux of the problem. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. ESCOM, can we... Sweetheart questions are not allowed. ESCOM, can we have responses?
Chair, I'll tell you the broader questions of the role of ESCOM and the role of energy in advancing the transformation program of the country. I think we'll need to come back on this because it is quite broad. We may not be able to do justice to that now. But just very briefly stated, we see ESCOM as a catalyst for economic development. And this impacts both residential and industrial customers or use. At a residential side, I think we have indicated when we were here to present the annual report, we indicated the electrification program that we have been undertaking on an annual basis and that we continue to undertake to ensure that every single home is connected to the grid in South Africa. That has a ripple effect on health, education, on the local economies of those people. And then we still have to find a way of quantifying the economic impact of an electrification connection to a household. But similarly, we provide energy that is required for the economy, for industrial use, from mining to manufacturing, without which we would not be able to have mines running as they are, providing employment opportunities, providing the necessary input into the economy. We would not have investments, including foreign direct investments into the country, as a result of the availability of energy that would then enable business to run and goods and services to be produced and traded. So there's a whole host of downstream value adds that arise directly from the provision of electricity to the country, and we will try to quantify that in more detail when we get an opportunity to come back to the committee for that purpose. We do see our role as a catalyst to the economy. We take that role quite seriously. The fact that we are also using public funds places even an additional responsibility on us to ensure that we spend those funds wisely. And that is why we are saying that we are recommitting ourselves to being open and transparent about our activities, even if it means exposing ourselves to the weaknesses, the challenges that we face. We will do so within the context of knowing that we are dealing with public funds. Then we'll deal with the other.
Chair, let me deal with the question relating to the strengthening of the grid to support the IPPs. I think it is a fact that our grid is not covering every centimeter of the country. It exists in particular channels. And to just use an analogy, if you think about the infrastructure, road infrastructure and so on, if one was to consider the siting of a new factory and stuff like that, one would be mindful of where the factory location will be in relation to the existing infrastructure, because there's a balance between having to construct a 100-kilometer road simply to link this factory to the normal network or to put it closer to where amenities exist. The same is true for the IPP connections. The process that is being followed together with the DOE here is to actually get applicants to indicate their preferred location so that we can see where the existing infrastructure is and what it will take to connect them to the grid. That commitment is contractual from an ESCOM perspective. it is contractual and it actually has penalties of late deliveries. And actually, ESCOM delivers on those. In some instances, we find that additional resources from a CAPEX perspective are required not only for the component that links the new IPP player, but to do further deep strengthening inside the existing infrastructure because it's weak. And I've said this before. infrastructure from a transmission and bulk distribution perspective is not where it needs to be given the long years of underinvestment in that area. But this dialogue, Chair, happens between ourselves, the IPPs, and the DOE all the time. When the IPP rounds are accelerated, what actually happens is that inadvertently, in some instances, new monies are required to do strengthening in areas that were not necessarily on ESCOM's radar from a planning perspective. It requires dialogue and engagement as long as we all understand that we are all after speedy connections of IPPs to relieve the electricity pressure. So I don't know the details of the Honourable Member's question necessarily, but these are some of the issues that have been taken into consideration for us to deal with. Our grid, over time, will evolve to a point where it will be easy and anybody can site their plant anywhere where they want without having to worry about the connectivities and so on. For now, it takes a to-and-fro optimization of resources. And Chair, you know, with all the money in the world, we'll still take some time to get this still dealt with. We are generally comfortable that from ESCOM perspective, in terms of our role, together with supporting the DOE program, which we always continuously in communication with them, we are not failing that process. But we may have to look at some of the details there. Let me talk about the delays at Kusile. the committee may be aware that Kusile, from a construction point of view, was actually delayed by a full year back in 2010. We had to stop the project because at that point we had no clue of how the funding of the project was going to be undertaken. And it's for that reason that you see Kusile being slightly behind BWP by almost a year. The delays in both projects fall generally under three categories. It's delays because productivity is poor, and I've spoken about some of it here and what we are doing about it. There are delays that are due to industrial action. In fact, at Midupi, we estimated the other time that collectively over the life of the projects, we have almost lost a full calendar year from industrial action. And there are delays that are encountered as a result of technical glitches. Technical glitches, some of them emanating from very limited engineering work done before the projects were executed because the decision to build was taken very quickly and we had to move on. And some of the challenges of an engineering nature have got to do with the actual execution of work itself. As we review these delays, we then begin to apportion the cost implications thereof and take those costs to the doorstep of the party responsible for them. This is the subject of very detailed claims program between ourselves and our contractors, and it will be a bloody one. It will be a bloody one because we're going to be dragging each other in courts, and we have started that process. We have beefed up our claims team on our side to be able to really live up to some of these international players in this space, and they're doing the same. As we do this, we have to keep on balancing the need to keep the work going on our side and not be spending our days in court endlessly and having no construction taking place on site. So we are navigating these complex issues. I'm unable to give details and specifics here because these are really commercial issues, and this process being so open, Chair, I'm quite aware that some of our contractors may actually be in the audience as we speak. But suffice to say that we are going through, and we've said this, we are going through the claims management process. We've got a number of claims from the contractors. We have ours that we are evolving. It is going to be keeping us quite busy. We have jacked ourselves up and asked for appropriate support to be able to defend this claim so that the appropriate parties are held accountable for paying. As we do this, we are also keeping our eye on ensuring that progress with construction continues. The question around the skilled contractors. It is a fact that globally construction companies are also experiencing skills challenges, and this is as a result of continuity of work that saw skilled people leaving the industry and the slowdown, the aging workforce, and so on. When you look at that, then you look at within the South African context, you also have to deal with a reality check of our own skills levels and how we're blending these two. Put on top of this the cultural issues when you bring in supervisors that are very well adapted to working in Europe and other countries. This is a country with its own dynamics in terms of how we engage. And some of the contractors we have seen that their supervisors were unable to cope with the level of stress and activities and way of doing things that we have to engage on. These projects are quite big, and there is no one template that fits the plan. What's important is, as you progress through it, how do you find creative ways that are unique to our situation that are helping us to move forward? Earlier on, the chief executive spoke about the relationship we found ourselves creating between ourselves, the workers of the contractors, and the contractors themselves. Ordinarily, your contractors' workers' problems are your contractors' workers' problems. They stop there. In this instance, they don't, because when my contractors' workers don't work, I have massive bills to pay. The country has got massive risk in terms of delays in the project for the power that we require, so we are forced to step in and protect our interest. And we have found innovative ways that have been found by professional IR bodies to have been groundbreaking. So we are not only building these power stations, we are also facilitating a development of a different society that tackles its problems as we go on. And this is the hard reality of what these projects are leaving us with. We really sailing in uncharted territories, we are adapting to challenges as they emerge, but we are not lacking the will. We are up to the task, we are working hard with our contractors, and we are continuing to fine-tune this for the remainder of our project, Chairperson.
Thank you. Before we have closing remarks by Honorable Tati Duba next to me here, I just want to say, firstly, that we'll make arrangements to have a discussion with NERSA on these matters that have arisen, not only today but on previous occasions. Secondly, I think it's important to appreciate that in the context of all these difficulties, at least we can say with some degree of certainty now that Medupi Unit 6 will come on stream within the next 100 days, that it is now certain. We've been having discussions, and they were told previously that this will happen this year. There have been some doubts. I'm sure that there's no doubt that this will happen, and it is in this context that we will be undertaking a joint visit, Honorable Chair, to Medupi to coincide, as the Chief Executive was saying, with one of the milestones there. I'm not certain whether this will be able to do in the next 14 days, the period we're referring to, given to our own program. But we will certainly go to Medupi for an oversight visit within the period of the 99 days. The dashboard that the Department of Public Enterprises, the Minister was referring to, and I'm sure Honorable Makubela Mashele, we can have a discussion with them about how we can have access to that. But as we've been saying, it is important that we also have our own dashboard. And it's not just in relation to Eskom. In relation to the entirety of the energy mix, that this committee has got to have its own dashboard so that we know what the deadlines are and we can hold people accountable. It is nice, really, to complain about people having failed in the past, this and that, especially if let me cut that out. Yeah. Can I say it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, if I was opposition, it is quite nice to say that, to say we failed there, we failed that. But that does not help our people and our country move forward. the because I don't want us to be a committee that spends all its time dealing with those issues about those kinds of failures, and they would be upset in future. But that we can hold each one of the entities that are reporting to us and the departments accountable on these things, and to ensure that they do succeed. So that kind of dashboard on the entirety of the energy mix is going to be important. When the issue of the base load was being discussed, I didn't return to that, because that issue is very important for me, that as we deal with that column of the base load and deal with the issues of decommissioning. So how do we sequence our actions in such a way that throughout this process we'll have security of supply, and taking into account all the energy mixes? So that thing, for me, at some point you're going to have a more clearer discussion amongst ourselves as the committee, and perhaps including public enterprises, to see how in the next few years we're going to ensure that there will be no possibility of lights going off. And I'm not talking about the immediate managed load shedding that ESCOM is talking about, but that we can ensure that all of the projects, whether it is by ESCOM or other entities, that are going to be on time, and that there's proper, not just synchronization of one unit, but the synchronization of the entirety of the energy mix as we bring all of these projects to fruition. So that kind of bigger dashboard for a committee like this is going to be quite important. Lastly, there's one thing that we don't celebrate sufficiently with Medupi. You know, the powerful waterbag of the future, of the present and future. The fact that there's a new city taking shape there under democratic South Africa, this hasn't happened. That we bring jobs to local people at a scale that it rarely happens anywhere in the country. So I think as we communicate the challenges we have, we must also communicate the good stories that we see. Because I'm certain that we may have differences, but as South Africans, we do want to ensure that we do succeed as a country. And we're going to be hard, of course, where there's failure. We've got to. It's our responsibility. But we must be excited, Chair. This is your home province, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. We must be very excited that there's a new seat, a completely new seat, taking shape there in Limpopo, under democratic South Africa. So, Chairperson, we can close our meeting, and thanks very much for gracing.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think in closing this meeting, we need to take food for thought that this new build program of ESCOM is our baby. And I'm saying this because I'm borrowing from the Tsonga phrase. Because if we don't take this approach to say this new build program is our baby, we will not be doing justice to the programs which we are supposed to oversight, and also to hold ESCOM accountable. We are here to make sure ESCOM succeeds in this new build program. And for them to succeed, we will play the oversight role. It's like raising a child. Wherever a child is doing wrong things, you don't fold your arms and say, she's growing, we will see at a later stage. You hit hard. You hit hard for the child to learn to do the correct things. This is our work as a committee of parliament. And our oversight must be robust. And being robust, it doesn't mean we must always condemn. If a child is doing wrong things, you hit hard, and on the other hand, you encourage, say, stand up and do the right thing. So we appreciate the challenges and the problems ESCOM is facing. As the minister indicated, to say most of them, they are not in their own making, they are historical. That's a fact we must accept. But that does not mean that we should stop criticizing the delays, the overspending, the fruitless and whatever. We should do that because it is the taxpayers' money which they must account. And as members were raising issues of the delays and the amount spent, the delays and the amount linked to the delays, all of us, we must be concerned about those issues. But we are grateful to say ESCOM is not hiding anything. They're just bringing all the issues on board so that all of us as South African, as responsible citizens of this country, we are able to hold them accountable. And we will arrange a meeting with them when we go to do an oversight in this projects, specifically in Medupi before the we don't have the date of the flame. We will really appreciate to visit before the flame is up in Medupi, and we are appreciating the hard work they are putting on, and even ourselves, we won't be resting up until we are all satisfied to say the project has given us the results we are all looking for. And we thank everybody in this house, those who were not participating, but we know they are participating because they are here, they are concerned. And we thank all honorable members for this time to interact with ESCOM, and we also thank ESCOM for coming. Thank you very much.